Hey, he's Jim Harden.
And this is Blake Giles.
And this is Sidelines.
And Headlines.
And we're here to talk about high school football and college football again. It's a Thursday night here in Athens, and we're at Brett's Casual Restaurant here on Athens West Shopping Center, out on West Broad Street. And it's a great environment for bringing friends and family and watching a few games on the tube if you want, and enjoying the good food.
So. Getting some good food. The Monster Mash is a special this week for Halloween. I had it, I think I was in here Tuesday. It's really good.
Did you?
That hamburger steak will do it for you.
All right. Well, good. Well, maybe we'll get a chance to sample that a little bit. This is the last weekend of high school football regular season. Can you believe it? It just seems to have flown by.
It always does.
And of course, we've had a couple of teams in this area who've already won region championships. Athens Academy last week defeated Rabun County 49-46.
A barn burner.
And you know who the hero was.
Keon Standifer.
Athens Academy was trailing 43-29 in the middle of the third quarter. And by the middle of the fourth quarter, they had reached the final score of 49-46. So in about a quarter's time, they scored 20 points.
It's crazy.
Now, he started it off with a 98-yard kickoff return, and then he also had like a 53-yard pass reception. And he was the Georgia High School Football Daily Player of the Week for the state of Georgia this week.
I saw that. I'm telling you, if they get hot with him, you know, he has a good game, they'll go toe-to-toe with anybody. I don't think Aquinas wants to play him again. Aquinas beat him first game of the year.
Well, Aquinas, it's interesting you mention Aquinas. Last year, they opened the season beating Aquinas. Then they actually drew Aquinas in the first round of the playoffs, and they lost because they had such a long layoff. That was one factor. They didn't play for like 4 weeks.
Same thing this week.
Same thing this year. They don't play this week. Their season's done. Nobody plays next week. They're going to have a first-round bye the week after that as a region champion, and then they'll finally play.
That's almost not fair.
It is. I'm not sure. I understand why the state gives everybody a week off.
Good to see you, sir.
Good to see you, Brent. I understand why the state gives everybody a week off. Part of it is in case there's a hurricane that comes through and you got to make up games and that kind of stuff. And fortunately, we did not have that this year. But and then, of course, there's just not enough teams to fill up the bracket in the private school. There's only 24 teams to place in a 32-team bracket. So eight teams get a first-round bye. So eight teams get at least a two-week off, and Academy's 3 weeks off.
So, as a coach, how do you even manage that?
I don't know. We were talking with Josh Alexander about this earlier, and he said, you know, he doesn't have enough guys really to scrimmage against himself. Plus, he doesn't want to get anybody hurt, but he does want to keep.
You got to keep them going. You got to give them rest, but you got to keep them in a routine.
Yeah.
So talk about Prince.
Well, Prince has got to play for the region championship. That's Friday night. They're hosting Hebron Christian. Now, those two teams played each other twice last year. Prince won the regular season finale to win the region, and then Hebron turned around and beat them in the state finals, partly because Andrew Beard was injured and only gained about 7 yards rushing in the game. But there's a little twist that goes with that that applies to this game Friday night, and I was just telling you about that. Prince Avenue is going to be without its starting quarterback. Ben Musser, who's had an excellent season. He's thrown for like 1,900 yards, scored a bunch of touchdowns. He's a good threat as a runner. He had an appendectomy earlier in the week, and so he's out for a good 3 weeks at least. And so Prince is going to have to turn to its freshman quarterback, a young man named Gavin Hollow. Now, if you guys have watched our little bumper that we put at the beginning of on the YouTube feed, sometimes we show a clip from inside the Georgia football practice facility of a quarterback picking up a snap on the ground and scrambling around and throwing it downfield for a touchdown.
I remember that.
That's Gavin Holler. 6'2", freshman, the guy can fling it. He has got a great arm. Remember that name, Gavin Hollum. You're going to hear his name on Saturdays on down the line. But that's a lot to ask of a freshman to come in against the number one ranked team in the state. And try to deliver a region championship.
What do you think, how do you feel about that whole playoff scenario and that classification beyond Prince and Hebron?
Well, I don't know enough about the other teams, not having seen them. Savannah Christian has traditionally been a strong program, but I think they graduated a lot of players. I'm not sure they're that strong this year. Hebron is definitely, they're number one, and I think they're number one
the
for
favorite, yeah.
Deservingly so. But you also have to factor in, now we get in teams, the Class A teams, Athens Academy jumps up in there. Calvary Day is a good, powerful team. What about from Lovett High School? They're not particularly highly ranked. They play a tough AAA schedule, but they'll be in there. Greater Atlanta Christian. I think it's pretty open, but I really think that Hebron Christian is the team to beat from everything
else. I think
else.
You're right.
Yeah, I mean, they've got a couple of guys. They've got a running back named Devin Caldwell. He's gained almost 1,300 yards and scored 19 touchdowns. And they got a receiver returner, Jarvis Mathurin. And he's got over 1,000 all-purpose yards.
Yeah, I saw that on the...
So those guys are going to be tough to beat. So that's going to be interesting to see. And everybody will be turned out in Bogart tomorrow night to see that game.
I know. That's going to be football weather tomorrow night. You better wear your long johns.
Well, it was that way last week up at, let's see where they play. Oh, East Jackson, where they won 51-28. And they had four touchdowns in the first quarter. So they pretty well had the game in hand early. But again, that was with Ben Musser as a quarterback. And so we'll see what they can do with Gavin Hollum.
Is Gavin Hollum really 6'2 in the ninth grade?
He really is 6'2. Now, he's not a stocky 6'2. He's thin, like most
ninth graders
are. But he has got a fine arm, and he puts a great touch on the football. I still remember a pass he threw for a touchdown up at Johns Creek, where he just led the receiver just perfectly on a crossing route and scored. He threw him open, which is difficult to do. And speaking of Johns Creek, did you see they fired their coach?
That's sad.
They haven't scored this year.
I didn't realize until you kind of explained it to me, kind of the weird demographic of Johns Creek. It's not a football culture
place. It's not. They've got a chance. They close out the season against Chattahoochee High School, which is the other bottom dweller in that region. They won one game this year. And last year in the season finale, Johns Creek scored 27 points. They lost, but they scored 27 points against Chattahoochee. So maybe they've got a chance at least to score in the final game. You would hope that happens.
Well, speaking of perfect or imperfect records, Cedar Shoals at Flowery Branch.
I think they lost again tonight.
They play tonight. They played last Thursday.
I'm not sure when that game is. This is a tough chance. Flowery Branch is a pretty good team.
You mentioned, I don't know if it was before we came on the air, that Morgan County and Callaway are playing down in Madison for the region championship.
Yeah. And it's interesting. These two guys are, quote, region rivals, but they're 120 miles apart from each other.
The way they do that is crazy.
Well, Morgan County they wanted to get away from certain private schools and asked to be in this particular region. And so they've had to do a lot of traveling this year to play. But they're 9-0, overall ranked 5 in the state. And they've got a quarterback, Davis Strickland, who's had an excellent season. They got a good running back, Christian Monfort, who's scored 28 touchdowns. And
that's a lot of touchdowns.
Yeah, now Callaway, to Prince Avenue Christian, opened the season with, and they've got a good football team too. So that's going to be a real barn burner. Now, this is from down closer to your neck of the woods, Wintersville Classic.
I know it.
Lowndes County at Valdosta, and the winner is the region champion.
That may have been a while since that game's been that much.
It has been a while. Now Valdosta, if they lose, they need some help, I think, to win the region. As long as, I think, if they win, they still need some help.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Somebody's got to score 30 points or less in their last game. And so I'm not sure who that is, how it's going to work out. But, you know, you can lock up the doors, throw away the key. In Valdosta, Georgia, absolutely. Friday night, you know where everybody's going to be.
Every time I meet somebody and they say, I'm from Valdosta, I say, you're a Viking or are you a Wildcat? And they, with pride, either way, they'll identify with one of the two. So that's big. It used to be even bigger, as you know, in terms of, you know, now the Metro Atlanta, the big schools in Metro Atlanta kind of steal the spotlight from South Georgia a little
bit. Well, you know, Valdosta High School way back and Athens High Clark Central had somewhat of a rivalry because they would play in the state finals so often. And I remember I had a good friend, Larry Webb. Larry's deceased now. He was a comptroller with Athens Regional Piedmont Hospital. And at one time he lived in Valdosta. He was on the Valdosta Touchdown Club down there. And he told me that one of the things that Valdosta had going for it was Moody Air Force Base.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the word got out in the Air Force, if you've got a young man who's a good high school football player, you need to get stationed at Moody Air Force Base during his high school year.
Exactly.
So they had a natural feeder program come all over the country.
I think that happened some in Warner Robins with the base there.
Yeah. And I bet you Jeff Herron took advantage of the sub base down in Camden County for the same bit. No military bases in this area to attract athletes to. So
but they certainly, those Clark Central Gladiators back in the day, they went toe to toe. They beat Buck Ballou senior year at Valdosta.
They did.
Clark Central beat them with Jim Bob Harris.
I think so. Yeah,
Jim Bob.
Yeah. Now Clark Central is going to be in the playoffs.
Well, I was about to say, Clark Central beat Alcove, and they're playing Winder Barrow,
that's right. And the winner of that game could be third, but either one of them, they're both going to get into the playoffs. So I think that's pretty safe to say, the bottom of it. Now, the game that's going to decide the region championship is one nobody saw beginning of the year, Habersham Central at Jackson County. Habersham Central, the last time they won a region championship was 2007. My grandson, Jack, is a senior at Habersham Central. He was born in 2007. So they haven't won a region championship since his birth. And then Jackson County, never a region champion. They've never won one. And I don't know if I've seen a prediction as to who might be favored in that game by the Maxwell computer, but that's going to be a big game.
Oconee County's at Jefferson. That's interesting. I guess Oconee lost to Monroe area last week.
You know, I think Oconee could really monk up the results with a win, but I'm not sure they can get the region championship. I don't know, because we're losing to Monroe area. But it would be like a three-way tie or something, possibly. I don't know how they would.
Well, beating Jefferson's going to be tough anyway.
Well, they did it last year.
That's right.
They beat them in the regular season, and they lost to them in the first round of the playoffs. So it was weird
how that worked. Well, talk about, we mentioned, I think, before we came on about North Oconee. They played another. They won, but they won a little closer game than they've been winning. And the quarterback, Faulkner, didn't play.
Faulkner did not play. And, you know, we had Stuart Steele from the Oconee Enterprise on with us last week, and he tells me that he's got some type of, I think, a shoulder injury, and it's not like it's totally debilitating. They're just trying to get him as healthy as they can. They've already clinched the region. You know, they're going to be the first team out of that region, so there's no power rankings that are involved. So even if they were to lose this game, who are they playing? I forgot. Walnut Grove. Walnut Grove comes out, I think, 5-4. I think they'll probably handle that game. But even if they were to lose, it wouldn't affect them. And then they've got that extra off week, and then maybe they can hope for Harrison to be ready to play in a couple of weeks. So, I was reading about his dad, Buster, just earlier today, talking about Haynes King and what a tough player Haynes is and how much he's helped Georgia Tech get to where they are. And, you know, I looked it up. The last time Georgia Tech was unbeaten deeper into the season than Georgia was 2007. Tech opened up 5-0, and Georgia lost its second game of the season to South Carolina.
But I think we missed this last week. I think the last time Tech was 7-0, 8-0 was like 1963.
Oh, that could well be. 66. They came to Athens and played Georgia in 66 and with a 9-0 record. And Georgia was 8-1. And Georgia won the game. And I believe Bobby Dodd retired after that season.
I think 66 was his last
year. Yeah, they lost the Georgia game, and then they lost to Florida in the Orange Bowl.
That's right.
I guess Spurrier was the quarterback for that Florida team. So anyway, speak back to high school. Big night tomorrow night. If you've got a team that's going to be in the playoffs, it's a great night to go to a high school football game.
Well, that it'll be a sad night for a lot of guys.
Yeah, last
season
game
will be over. A lot of guys pour their heart, and so I tell you, I thought my last game was sad for me, but with my two sons, their last two games, it was. I tell you what, it was an emotional night for sure.
Well, you know, all of my children played high school sports. My son went on and played some basketball and soccer and small college level, and my younger daughter, she played tennis and soccer at the college level. But still, that last high school game is emotional. You spent so many years with the same teammates. You're so invested with what you've been doing. And so, yeah, it's something. So those, if you're in private school, you know you're going to get to play next week or in a couple of weeks because all of them are making the playoffs. But, yeah, can be a long, a sad night in some respects. So
it'll be exciting starting, you know, with the playoffs starting. Yeah. We'll have some more. I don't say more to talk about, but maybe some more interesting storylines.
Yeah, there you go. Hey, we'll come back and let's talk about college football in a minute. Remember now, if you like us, be sure to subscribe. Also, tell everybody that you found Sidelines and Headlines and send us an email, sidelinesheadlines@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. If you got some ideas and subjects you want us to cover, let us know.
Come eat at Brett's.
Yeah.
Like us on Facebook. And we appreciate you watching.
All right, we'll be back in a minute with some more here on Sidelines and Headlines. Hey, I'm Blake Giles.
I'm Jim Harden.
It's the Sidelines
and Headlines.
And you know, I talked about earlier, every time I come into Brett's, I see somebody you know, and you just saw somebody you knew.
I saw somebody from Forsyth, Georgia.
How about that?
In Brett's. It's nationwide, Brett's.
I tell you, it is.
All over the world.
Hey, this has been, in college football, the coaching carousel has been unbelievable. So many coaches, so many jobs open. I got a list of them. There's so many. I didn't want to miss any. So listen to all these jobs that are open. LSU, Florida, and Arkansas in the SEC so far. Then you got Penn State, Oklahoma State, UCLA, Virginia Tech, Stanford, Oregon State, Colorado State, UAB. There's a lot of shakeup in college football.
It's crazy.
And then people are saying, is Auburn going to fire their coach? Is Kentucky going to finally pull the trigger on Mark Stoops? What about Mississippi State? You know, they're winless in conference get play. And then what about Florida State? Who knows?
Well, as an Auburn fan, I've read a lot of stuff the last few days since Brian Kelly got fired. You know, do you want to fire your coach and then be the, you know, where are you in the pecking order to get the best guy out there? Because you got Penn State, Florida, and LSU, the arguably better jobs.
Yeah. I was reading today, some people are saying LSU is one of the premier jobs in the country. And I think probably Nick Saban made it so because he came there, they'd had a number of losing seasons in a row, and he got it turned around. And now they've had three national championships under three different head coaches. And they don't have another major Power Four school in their state. Now, Tulane has gotten good again, but are they really on the level with LSU? And so they're the big dog in the state. They're so big, they got the governor involved. Now.
That's right. I saw that. Go back to the thing everybody's beaten to death, you know, Lane Kiffin. Will he stay at Ole Miss? You know, he says there's more than money involved, and I'm sure that may be true with him. And I don't think there's any arguing. What you just said, LSU, three national championships in the last 25 years with three different coaches. Florida in the last 30 years, they've won three with two different coaches. I know NIL, all that's changed a little, you know, the power structure. But I still think if you're a blue blood program like them, I mean, I just think LSU, gosh, if I was a coach, I'd want to go to LSU. It just seems like when you look at the history, the talent, they're close to New Orleans, Houston, Mobile, Memphis. I mean, it just seems like, you know, they're almost like Georgia is being here so close to Metro Atlanta. It just seems like the recipe's there for them to be great. With Lane Kiffin, I don't know, would Florida be more attractive than LSU?
Well, you know, I looked at the candidates that have been listed, and a lot of them are listed for multiple jobs. Of course, Lane Kiffin, his name seems to rise to the top on a number of those jobs, in particular the LSU and Florida jobs. Not so much Penn State. I haven't seen his name thrown out for Penn State. Tulane's coach, John Summerall, has been mentioned for the LSU job. Marcus Freeman at Notre Dame mentioned for the LSU job. Would you leave Notre Dame? I mean, you think about elite jobs. Notre Dame's up there among the elite jobs, wouldn't you think?
Well, Brian Kelly left.
Yeah, for LSU. So would LSU reach out again to get the Notre Dame coach to be its head coach? That just seems kind of weird. Here's a name that's been thrown out, Rhett Lashley at SMU, particularly for the Florida job.
You know, he's an Arkansas grad.
Yeah.
He coached at Auburn.
Jed Fish at Washington is a name that's being thrown out there. Clark Lee at Vanderbilt. He's turned a doormat program into a top 10 team that is going into Texas this week, down as a odds makers by less than 5 points. And, you know, and could, if they come out of there with a win, nobody's really going to be surprised.
Well, it's like we talked about last week. He and Brett Key at Georgia Tech, both at their alma maters. I
mean, so is Jeff Brohm at Louisville. A lot of teams are throwing his name out there as a candidate.
So what if somebody comes knocking for one of those three? What do they do?
You know, you talked about how it's a new world now with NIL and the transfer portal. I think we're still on the ground floor of seeing how that's all going to shake out. And can a team like Ole Miss, for example, rise to the top? And we're seeing a perfect example, a test case right now with Indiana.
Yep.
Indiana, a perennial college football doormat, number two in the country. And got to play, not going to play Ohio State. They're pointed toward a Big Ten championship, undefeated against undefeated, and to see who's going to be that. And they're almost a certain shoe-in for the second straight year. Indiana in the college football playoffs. Who had that on their bingo card 2 years ago?
Well, look at the top. Look at the AP top 10 right now. Yeah, you got Vandy, Texas A&M at normally there. I looked at that today, and I was going to make the point with you tonight on the podcast how the blue buds are still there, how the rich still get richer. But it really has changed a little bit. You got Ole Miss is in the top 10.
Yeah.
But I heard somebody, you know, if Lane Kiffin in his mind right now, somebody from Florida has called him, and he said, I'll come, you know, and they're working out a deal behind the scenes. Okay. They're in the college football playoff. They keep winning. I mean, how would the timing of that work? I mean, it's almost like, can it even happen?
Well, you know, Coach Dooley dealt with this in 1980 when Auburn tried to recruit him to be their head coach. Now, I don't know what the deal was if they weren't going to say, you got to come now. And that may have been one reason that he said, you know, I got a chance to win a national championship. I got Herschel Walker on my side. I think I'll stay where I'm at. But, yeah, that is a factor. The same thing if you were – even Clark Lee, if somebody were to come after him, he's liable to be in the playoffs. And I can't see these teams, these coaches, leaping off of the – to take another job and leaving that chance behind to win a national championship. I mean, that's what they're in it for.
I know. Speaking of Ole Miss, I mean, did you watch any of their game?
Who did they play?
Oklahoma?
Very little.
Well, if I'm Georgia, I don't want to have to play them again in the playoff.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I'm not sure anybody wants to play them. But, you know, does all that stuff become a distraction? He seems like, to this point, he seems like he's just kind of said, you know.
Well, you know, from everything he's saying, I'm focused on what we're doing here at Ole Miss. And what else is he going to say?
Yeah, what else is he going to say?
Exactly. But here's the thing that I think, though, that a lot of the media is missing. And I don't know that athletic directors are missing this, but I did a survey of the top 25 teams, the snapshot of today's 25 teams. This is just a snapshot. Of those 25 teams, how many of them have head coaches who had head coaching experience at another school before they were at their current school in the top 25?
How you doing, Coach?
Hey, Mike. Mike Cavan just walked in. How many of them had head coaching experiences at other schools before their current head coaching positions in a top 25 school? Out of 25 teams, how many?
You got me, Tim.
11. 14 of the top 25 were assistant coaches before they took over their present positions. Let's look at them. Ryan Day. He had never been anything more than an assistant before Ohio State hired him. And then you got Kirby Smart.
Yeah.
Never been anything more than assistant. Dan Lanning. Only been an assistant coach before he was hired. Clark Lee at Vanderbilt. Never had been a head coach. Kalani Sitake at BYU. Never been a head coach. Marcus Freeman, Notre Dame. Never been a head coach. You probably don't even know who Joey McGuire coaches. Joey McGuire is the Texas Tech's head coach.
Yeah.
He had never been a head coach before that. Tony Elliott had been a longtime assistant at Clemson before he went to Virginia. Brent Venables. Longtime at Clemson before he went to Oklahoma. Sharon Moore, he had been a Michigan assistant before he was promoted. Kyle Whittingham had been at Utah since 1992 before they had promoted him to head coach. And then, so that's 14 of the top 25 were assistant coaches. And the media, most of the time when they say, okay, who are they looking at? They throw out the names of all the top head coaches. I think one reason is they don't keep up with the assistant coaches like ADs and coaches do. They're not paying attention to that. Now, they do some. There were a couple of assistants that were mentioned as candidates. Brian Hartline, the offensive coordinator at Ohio State, has been mentioned in connection with the Ohio State job. Tony White, the Florida State defensive coordinator. He's a California native, mentioned with the UCLA job. So I'm thinking that if all these ADs are going to do is focus on who is the best head coach out there that I can steal, they may be missing the next guy that's going to be a star.
I don't know if we want to talk about these two guys, but a couple of guys that just names get forgotten in all this. It may be a factor in some of this. Deion Sanders and Jimbo Fisher.
Deion Sanders was thrown out as a candidate for the Arkansas job. Where is Jackson State that he used to coach? That's in Mississippi. Yeah, so he's familiar with the area. Of course, he played with the Cowboys, so he's been in the Southwest before. That could be. I've heard Jimbo Fisher's name mentioned. Ed Orgeron's name is floating up. Ed Orgeron is promoting himself. He said, call me up, LSU. I'm ready to come back. I just don't know.
I think from his actual comments and maybe just reading between the lines, I think he just wants to get back in it, maybe just being a defensive line coach or something.
Maybe so. You know, you look at not the buyouts, but the settlements these coaches are getting, you know, multi-million dollars. It's really generational wealth that they're quitting with. I mean, I would not coach for a third of what they're getting, you know, if you know what I mean. But
yeah.
They don't have to do anything. I mean, James Franklin doesn't have to coach ever again in his life. He's getting $53 million. He could play golf or pickleball or whatever he wanted to do for the rest of his life if he wanted to, or go into the mission field and be a minister. I don't know, but like Bill McCartney did up in Colorado.
Yeah.
But
Well, I saw somebody present the scenario, you know, with Jimbo Fisher. You know, would he do something where he worked for 3 years and just didn't take a salary? Because is there an offset with his deal with A&M?
Some of them have offsets and some of them don't. Now, I noticed today also, did you see that Matt Rhule at Nebraska, he got a contract extension and they increased his buyout to $15 million. In other words, if somebody hires Matt Rhule, they got to pay Nebraska $15 million. So if you look at your school that just fired Brian Kelly and you're paying him $49 million, and then you got to pay another $15 million to hire this guy, that's pretty much making him off limits.
Yeah.
I mean, there's only so much money to go around.
That's right. Well, back to that scenario about Jimbo Fisher, somebody said, well, you know, he could do first 3 years, they don't take a salary. They can spend all that money they're saving on and then have an agreement beyond that. I mean, he's still a relatively young guy. What is he, 59, 60 years old?
I don't know how old he is. Would you hire Jimbo Fisher?
I don't think so, but you know.
I don't know enough about the X's and O's of college football, but I was always told that his offense was one of the most complex offenses.
I think that's
right. It was too complex, really, and nobody could really master it. You look at the Texas A&M quarterbacks that are out there doing well. Haynes King, we mentioned him. Of course, Max Johnson has kind of been forgotten over at North Carolina, but he's still floating around out there. And there were other ex-A&M quarterbacks that wound up transferring elsewhere and playing. So I don't know whether I would want Jimbo Fisher as my head guy or not.
You talk about assistant coaches, you know, look back 10 years, and it's easy to say Kirby Smart was a slam dunk, but there was some risk with that. You know, he's never been a head coach.
Yeah, you know, and if you look back at what Georgia's tradition had been in hiring head coaches, all the way back to Dooley. Dooley was an assistant at Auburn. Ray Goff was an assistant at Georgia. Now, Jim Donnan was interrupted that flow. He was a head coach at Marshall. And then you hired Mark Richt, who was an assistant at Florida State. That's been Georgia's modus operandi traditionally, is to go and find a young assistant coach and bring him on. And I'd have to say that it worked with the last two coaches. Both Mark Richt and Kirby Smart were successful. Kirby much more so, but you can't say that Mark Richt was a failure as a football coach at Georgia. So Brent Key at Tech, he's a guy who never had head coaching experience, and now look where he's at. So I just think these ADs, they need to be looking around at who's the next guy that's going to be the man that's going to come up. Somebody had to hire Nick Saban first. I guess it was Michigan State.
Toledo.
Oh, was he at Toledo first?
Yeah.
Okay. But, you know, and some of these guys, even Kurt Cignetti at Indiana, I mean, he had been a head coach, but he was a head coach at schools hardly anybody ever heard of.
He paid some serious dues.
He's paid his dues at Elon, IUP, and finally he made a little splash with James Madison University. Now, the current James Madison University coach has been mentioned as a candidate for some of these jobs. His name is Bob Chesney. So, you know, that's another thing. You could look at some of these smaller programs where you don't have the resources, but you've been able to be successful. So I don't know.
Well, good friend of mine in college married a guy from Athens named Mike Woolley. Her dad was the first coach at McMillan's, his last name, was the very first coach at JMU back in the day.
No kidding.
He was.
Had a football program that long, have they?
That would have been, I guess, in the 50s or 60s they would have started. But, you know, I had to go to my little Presbyterian college.
There you go.
They got beat.
Oh, my gosh.
They got beat by Dayton.
Do you remember the score?
Like 34-21 or something. But they've
so
got
respectable.
They've got, I don't even know how to pronounce it, Valparaiso. Valparaiso this week.
Which is a basketball power. I've heard of them in basketball. But
anyway, I had to sneak that in. But the big one this week, the Dogs and the Gators. You're going.
I am going. We've got, of course, Friday night having a high school game that I do the streaming video for. Means can't leave until after that game, and our plans are to maybe drive down that night and spend the night with some friends down in South Georgia and then get up the next morning and go down to Jacksonville. And of course my wife Jan just had knee replacement surgery, and she's getting around pretty good, so we think she can make the trek.
She must be doing good. She's going to take that out.
She's going to make this trip. So have you ever been to a Georgia-Florida game, Jim?
I have.
When did you go?
I think 1991 was the only time. It was a rainy, cold. It was the coldest I've ever been in my life, I think. Florida, Spurrier, second year, Florida blew them out.
Yeah, I went in 93 where it was one of those rainy,
Eric's
just terrible days. And this is, I got a story about that. Elbert County played Pierce County at Pierce County the night before in the state playoffs. And so my good friend Barry Roberts, who I'm staying with, his son Chris was the quarterback at Pierce County. And so I was going to go down and cover the Elbert County, Pierce County game for the newspaper and then drive from there to Jacksonville the next day and meet up with the rest of the staff to cover the game. Well, the weather was terrible. The rest of the staff was going to fly down in a private plane. The plane couldn't get into Athens, and then if it did, it couldn't get into Jacksonville. And so the rest, I'm there by myself, at least I'm there. I'm the only guy covering the game, which is unusual for a hometown newspaper to only have one guy to cover that game. So I'm it. I'm covering the game. So I'm on the sidelines at the end of the game, and this is the game that ended with Florida calling a late timeout and getting a do-over when Georgia scored a touchdown.
Eric Zier, I forget who the receiver was.
Something with his initials. He had double initials, I think. Anyway, so I'm down there on the sidelines, and I get bumped. Somebody bumps into me, and it's a pretty severe bump. And I shove the guy back, which is uncharacteristic for me. Jim, you know me.
You're a pacifist.
That's right. I'm a peacemaker, I'm a lover, not a fighter, said Paul McCartney. So it was a big burly guy carrying a camera. He didn't see me. He's filming stuff. And I said, hey, I'm sorry. And he was mad, and it just let the air out, and we were okay after that. So I think it was in the locker room after that game that I'm in there, and the media's interviewing Ray Goff. And some guy behind me says, Coach, how come we didn't do such and such? Well, as a media person, when you hear somebody ask, how come we didn't do something? You know, media asked, how come you didn't do something?
Right.
I said, this guy's not media. I turned around, and it's some guy who's just got into the locker room. I don't know how he did it. There's a state patrolman nearby, and I pointed at him. I said, this guy has no credentials. Get him out of here.
That's great.
So that was the last Georgia-Florida game that I covered, was that 93 game.
Well, The great Mike Cavan walked. Didn't he quarterback the Dogs? He walked in breast night. You never know who you're going to see. 51-0 in 1968.
Yeah, that was practically a monsoon, that game. Jake Scott had a big game, ran a punt back almost for a touchdown. And
that was a little before my time, but yeah, in the rain.
I did not go to that game. First game I went to, I believe, was 71. And that was a blowout for Georgia, 49-7. And Andy Johnson didn't even play. James Ray played. Andy was rested, and then he started the next week in that big game we talked about with Auburn when Pat Sullivan and Terry Beasley had a big game in Athens.
We talk about how you and I have the gray hair. We can look back. Georgia's kind of owned them here recently. They owned them pretty much under Dooley, but
the game has gone in cycles. It really has.
I mean, can you believe Florida beat, I think it's 18 out of 20?
Yeah.
With Spurrier.
It was a nightmare. My son-in-law and daughter go down every year pretty much, and he used to park and have to walk by a coffee factory or something, and he said the smell of coffee, he associated with the smell of defeat. It happened so many times to him down there. So it was so many tough games. I was there. I was not there for the Lindsey Scott game. Didn't go in 80. I went the next year, 81. Same score, just different scenario and everything. I was there for the Richard Appleby
to Gene Washington.
I was on the sidelines going down to get in the press box by the time that play was made. And the visual image I have was Ray Goff had his helmet in his hand, dancing up and down the sidelines, waving it as Gene Washington was running down the field for the touchdown. That was a great memory. So, I've been there many times, seen them win, seen them lose. It's a unique experience, and of course, it won't happen again for
2 years.
Two more years, they're going to play
Orlando or Tampa,
Atlanta. Yeah. So,
I may have mentioned this to you before. When you see the old games on ESPN Classic or whatever, everybody talks about the 1980 Georgia Florida game. That next year, 1981. I know you said you were there. I think Herschel touched the ball 54 times.
Oh yeah.
And I think if you go back, if you're a fan of defense, running, he touched it 54 times, and there were about 30 times in that game when he got stopped for no gain. Mm-hmm. But that just showed how tough he was.
Oh yeah.
They
threw the ball to him a bunch of times.
He scored two touchdowns on
pass reception. That's right.
But Florida had Wilbur Marshall, and they had a linebacker named Fernandez, I think was his last name, and they were popping Herschel.
Yeah.
But when it was all said and done.
And then, of course, the next year, I think Georgia won 44-0, something like that. So, yeah. The game has just gone in cycles, and right now Georgia's in a good cycle. And it looks like that, I guess Napier never beat them.
And last time they beat him was at 20 with Dan Mullen.
That's right.
What do you think about the game this week? I've asked several people that question. I want to see if you answered the same way everybody else has answered.
Well, I feel good about Georgia, their chances to win. But Florida has got playmakers, and they have a decent defense. Now, they're going to throw some things. There'll be some wrinkles. They spent a week off. You can't remake a team in 1 week, but you can put some different wrinkles in. I say you can't remake a team. The 1980 Florida team basically flipped their script entirely against Georgia. But I really think feel good about Georgia's chances this week.
What I was going to say, the people I've asked, and I agree with this too, I think it'll be a good game for about a half. Because I think Florida, who knows what they'll do.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think Georgia will pull away and beat them by 10 points or so or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. Now, Auburn, do they play this week?
They got Kentucky. They got the big win against the Razorbacks last week. Switch quarterbacks there towards the end.
I saw that. What happened with
He threw a bad Jackson. Interception, threw a pick six, and they pulled him.
Now, is this the guy who was there last year, the new quarterback?
No. This guy transferred from Stanford.
Okay.
And I'll have to say, this is just stupid fan watching. It looked like to me when the kid went the game, they looked different. He looked more comfortable. I mean, he didn't do a lot. He threw the ball several times and looked okay. But just something about his presence, it just seemed like they were better with him out there a little bit. But I don't know. I saw an interview with Freeze today. I don't know who they'll start. But if they can beat Kentucky, then you got
Mercer.
Vandy, Mercer, and Bama.
Well, that Vandy game looks pretty tough.
Yeah, Vandy will be tough, and Bama obviously will be tough. But, I mean, I don't know.
They got a chance to be bowl eligible. And is that enough?
I don't know. Again, like we said earlier, I don't think at this point they're probably not going to fire him because they really would be in a pickle list. They've got a plan for somebody out there that we don't know, some assistant. We've already talked about obviously Brian Kelly, LSU, losing Texas A&M sparked that. I was so glad that Ole Miss beat Oklahoma. I got so tired of hearing about Oklahoma the first couple weeks of the season. It was like everybody was trying to anoint them.
I thought that there was a lot of talk about John Mateer, the quarterback. And I really think some of that was just you talk about a quarterback who has a presence. He does seem to have a presence about him on the field, but I'm not sure that he's that great of a quarterback. I just don't know. But
This is just fan. I mean, mm-hmm. I don't know Brent Venables personally, but he just seems, I mean, he's a good-looking guy, well-spoken. The guy knows football. He was at Clemson, part of a couple of national championships. But there's something about them just kind of rubbed me wrong. I think they had a little bit of a sense of entitlement with Oklahoma or something. I'm almost glad. I hope they get whipped again this week by Tennessee.
Oklahoma until the last several years, was right up there with Ohio State of just never having really a bad year. I mean, yeah. Ohio State, I mean, I don't like Ohio State, but you have to give them credit. They have almost no down years in their history. They have always been good, and this year is no exception.
Well, you think about Oklahoma in the history of their program, have had two of the best runs ever with Bud Wilkerson and then with Barry Switzer.
Yeah, and of course, Stoops himself.
Well, Stoops won a national title.
Yeah, you can't say anything bad about him as well. So,
what do you think? You think Tennessee beats them?
I do. I do think Tennessee. I do think Tennessee. You know, I have to give credit to Logan Booker at WRC, the ref. They were talking about that this morning. This weekend, if you looked at it preseason, looked like, wow, this is a mega weekend with all these heavyweight showdowns. But so many of those teams that were expected to be heavyweights, like Penn State, they're not heavyweights anymore. You know, so that Penn State-Ohio State game doesn't look like such a big game anymore.
What about Texas and Vandy? What do you think about them?
Man, what's Arch? Is he going to play? You know, he's been in concussion protocol most of the week. And that kid they brought in, Matthew Caldwell, I looked him up. This is his fourth team in 4 years.
I saw that, too.
He played for Jacksonville State, Gardner-Webb, Troy, and now Texas. So, you know, and to his credit, he came in and delivered to beat Mississippi State, who they've got to be kicking themselves. They had two wins in the bag. The punt return against Texas was a killer. And, of course, they threw that interception against Florida late that they hadn't done that.
Answer your question earlier. I don't, in my opinion, I don't think they should fire their coach. I think they're like Auburn. They just got to learn how to win.
I agree.
I think that guy's not a bad coach.
I mean, last year, to go winless in the conference, they were not good. This year, they're not bad. I mean, Georgia's got to go there next week, and it's not looking like a pushover.
Yeah, that's right.
So, you know, it's an interesting – still, there's some good games this week, and you mentioned the Oklahoma-Tennessee game is one of them. Vandy-Texas is another game. Nobody's going to really care much, Navy and North Texas. That's a 7-0 Navy against a 7-1 North Texas. That's not going to move the meter down here too much. South Carolina's at Ole Miss. And, I mean, they're the Gamecocks last week, the students ready to rush the field.
I tell you what, Alabama, they went through a gauntlet, and they deserve an off week, and they got it this week. But it'll be big for Ole Miss, you know, kind of in this from the standpoint of kind of sustaining what they've been doing. South Carolina's obviously not great, but you can't just fumble it away to them. They beat you.
They've got some players. In the ACC, Virginia is sitting right there. They have to travel to Cal. So cross country, is that a factor? We'll find out how much of a deal that is to have to fly all the way across the country to play a game and get on the plane and come back.
It seems like sometimes it is a deal for some people.
And so we'll see. Where is it? Southern Cal. They're playing. They're doing the other way. They're going to the middle of the country. They got to play at Nebraska this
Tech,
week.
Tech is
North Carolina State.
North Carolina State.
Tech, I'll say this about Tech. They can't stop the run. Their defense against the run has been pretty bad this year. But they have Haynes King, and he seems by himself to just will the offense to work, and they just keep putting the ball in his hands. If he can stand up to the battering and bruising that he's taking, they can do it. But it's not a given they're going to beat North Carolina State.
It's not.
Tech has kind of played with its food, so to speak, from time to time. And you know, they shouldn't have beat Wake Forest. They should have lost that game.
That game was
that
over.
Offsides penalty was.
This is kind of a silly thing to say. Did you watch College Game Day Saturday?
I did not.
Did you? They did an interview. You know how they do now with the technology so good. They put an earbud and they were interviewing Haynes King. He was out there throwing, warming up.
Okay.
He's a cool customer. I mean, you know, he was just chatting like he could have been one of the crew now. And I'm sure that's his personality.
Yeah.
When you look at them and what they're doing and how good he is.
Well, I read an interesting story on The Athletic today, or ESPN, I can't remember which one, about him and his background. He grew up a son of a coach out in Texas and was, they said, just super competitive. They had to ban him from board games because he couldn't stand to lose. And so he's just ultra competitive. But he's obviously a good athlete, too. And and he doesn't write many checks that he can't cash with his mouth, so he's able to live up to it and everything. I said another game that was coming up. Oh, it was Wake Forest at Florida State. You know, it is Florida State. Which Florida State is this? The Florida State that beat Alabama, or the Florida State that's lost so many recent games? And is Norvell safe?
Yeah, easily. We didn't talk about that much earlier, but what if they? I think they might be like Auburn. I mean, gosh, if we get rid of this guy, who are we gonna get? You know.
Again, I think these schools have got to look next step down. There's, and even then, there's gonna be competition for the top OCs and DCs that are available out there, and maybe they even look to the pros. Who's the guy? Who was at LSU? Offensive coordinator
with
Baltimore Ravens now.
Yeah.
No, he's not with the Ravens. He's with
your guy's with the Ravens.
That's
the guy
right.
With Georgia.
Munkin's with the Ravens. But you know, maybe. But they say he's kind of in line to get an NFL head coaching job. And you know, they get paid well too, and they don't have to go on the road and recruit. So it's a lot harder to win at the NFL level than it is in the college level.
Just ask the Falcons.
Yeah. And then one other game that I wanted to mention, Miami at SMU. At the beginning of the year, it looked like a big showdown, top 10 teams. SMU's kind of slipped a little bit, but we just have to see how it goes.
You mentioned Rhett Lashley earlier. Is he still a candidate for some of these jobs? Miami, are they going to – I mean, which version of them going to show up, you know?
I know.
And where will they be, you know, in a month? Well, how would we
talking
about
Miami, I don't think they control their own destiny as far as getting to the conference championship game. Now, I think
you're right.
I think that Tech obviously does. And I think maybe Virginia is the other one that could possibly, you know – they can handle it. If they handle their business, they can be in that. Who had that in their bingo card? Tech and Virginia in the ACC championship game.
Well, I guess Texas A&M, speaking back to the SEC race, I mean, obviously they're in the driver's seat.
Yep.
Bama's in the driver's seat.
Those two teams.
And I guess A&M's off this week. Is that right?
Let's see.
That's good for them, probably. They may have managed to survive, kind of like Alabama's off. They earned it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, I've only seen a little bit of Texas A&M, and I really don't know what to think about them. But Mike Elko's done the job over there, but they still got to play Texas, and so we'll see how that goes. Georgia doesn't have a good path to get to Atlanta right now. I mean, obviously they have to win out, and then if they're tied with Alabama, they lose in head to head. I don't know what they would do if they're tied with somebody else. How that would shake out.
Yeah, I don't know what the second tiebreaker is.
Yeah. So anyway, oh boy. Well, it's been this coaching carousel has really made college football. And you think about all of these guys are getting fired, and it also affects all the assistant coaches who could ultimately lose their jobs, and then by trickle-down effects, their families and their children and all of them. Now, the one thing they've got going, they do have these settlement packages. It's not like they're going out on the street hungry, but their egos are bruised and, you know.
Well, I thought about kind of what you're saying, you know, is you think about Hugh Freeze. I mean, the guy's had cancer this summer, you know.
This summer he had cancer?
Yeah, dealing with prostate cancer.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, they're people, whatever. You know, so they got family. So you know, are we being good Christians to criticize these people? But the flip side of that is, they get paid a ton of money. And it's part of the job, you know.
You know, I was thinking about that in relation to Brian Kelly, and going back to that clip that was played after the game where they won 20-10, and the guy asked him about his offense, and he got all upset and in the guy's face. Is that really your first question you want to ask about the offense? And in hindsight, I'm thinking back. You know, coaches really ought to think about, I need to be diplomatic with the way I answer every question, because I don't know when this kind of stuff can come back and haunt me. Because here's what I read and heard about what happened with Kelly. is that he's in with the AD, and AD says, you need to make some changes on your staff, and he pushes back, and then an hour later, he's out the door. And so the fact that he pushed back was aggravated by the fact that he had displayed less than professional conduct in an interview earlier this year. I don't know. I'll say this about the Georgia coaches that I interviewed, and I interviewed Dooley. I interviewed Ray Goff a few times, Jim Donnan. Those guys were always professional. I'm sure I asked some dumb questions, but they
Not
never.
You.
Yeah, I'm sure I did. Jim Watley one time called me out on it. That's another story for another day, the baseball coach at Georgia. But they always answered professionally without getting their dander up. They knew how to keep their cool on the lectern. Now, maybe they went behind the scenes and complained. That's fine. But, you know, when you're out there in front of the media, in front of the fans, and, of course, now everybody sees it. The press conferences are all recorded, and there's no secrets.
Well, there's very few guys that get to the point, like you were saying, that where they stuff like that can't come back to haunt them. You know? Mm-hmm. Spurrier, Saban, Barry Switzer back in the day, maybe, you know, Jimmy Johnson, whoever. But
well, even Woody Hayes. Of course, now, Woody, his behavior was pretty extreme, but it was not enough. Even his cachet was not enough to save his job.
Yeah.
So you do have to be, and of course it's an emotional business. It's highly emotional, and we see that on the sidelines, the way the coaches behave. I mean, they're in the moment.
Well, I think Kirby handles it right now. They're doing great overall. I think he handles it brilliantly. The way it'd be interesting to see, you know. They lost a couple in a row, and people get on him and be interested because he really hadn't had to deal with that.
No.
This is his first year, and everybody gave him a pass on that first year. They've been pretty good, but there's an art to that, whether you win or lose. And I think Coach Dooley was probably pretty good at it the whole time.
And he had some losing streaks, Coach Dooley did. Has Kirby ever had losing streaks? I can't remember.
I don't think they've lost two games in a row since his first year, have they?
It could be. That's pretty remarkable in and of itself if that's a true statistic, and I don't want to say it is because I haven't checked it up. That's something I'll have to look into and see if it's true. So if you were going to say this is the number one job that's available, which one would you say?
LSU.
LSU? I would probably agree.
And I do think, I know in Athens, Georgia, people don't like to give Florida too much credit, but I still think they have a ton of potential to be great with the right guy.
But they, in a sense, if you look at the history of Florida, the blips of success are outnumbered by the years of mediocrity. The Spurrier years and the Urban Meyer years are the exceptions, whereas the rule is they've been middle-of-the-road team. And you know, it's a competitive state with other teams that want to win, and a lot of teams are coming in there to get the talent that's in the state. It's also been interesting to me that nobody's hired anybody yet except for Kent State. Kent State had an opening. They hired somebody. All these jobs are still open.
Oh, that's part of the deal.
Phone calls are going back and forth. What about the role that agents are playing? Have you heard about that, too?
What Lane Kiffin said about Jimmy Sexton.
No, what did he say?
I think it was him. You know, I don't know if I buy this, but he may have been joking, man. I said, Sexton gets on him. So I told Jimmy, it's not all about money. He said, yes, it is. But well, I don't know how I'd feel if when you're making, just like Lane, his family's supposedly happy in Oxford, you know, if you're making $11 million versus $12 million, is that going to make you move? Who knows? I don't know.
And he's got to start over wherever he goes, and maybe he wants to do that. Who knows? Some coaches, they're builders, and other coaches are sustainers.
Well, he's a young guy. He's very youthful. I mean, he probably looks younger than he is. I mean, you know, he's probably got a 15, 20-year window. He can still coach.
Yeah.
And he might be thinking about that, too. Who knows?
Yeah, and you think about a guy who's remade his career. That's Lane Kiffin. I mean, you think about how he burned the bridge at Tennessee, and then get fired on the tarmac at Southern Cal. And what did he do with the Raiders? I mean, he was head coach of the Raiders, right?
Yeah, unbelievably, at like age 31 or something. And they Al Day or whoever the Davis, they ran him off for some reason. But I mean, you know, we love Americans. We love redemption.
The comeback story. Yeah, that's right.
I mean, that's why I was kind of like hoping, you know, Hugh Freeze. I mean, we've all made mistakes. I mean, he apparently did some slimy kind of stuff, but you know, he claims to be, you know, remorseful, and he's a, you know, loves Jesus and all that stuff.
You
kind of, part of you kind of cheers for him, but same thing with Kiffin. But we mentioned Dion earlier, Jimbo Fisher. It's gonna be fun what we're sitting here talking about with regard to coaches in about 3 months.
Yeah, and there's going to be a trickle down domino effect, and you got every time a coach leaves, you're going to have all the players. And they have a new rule now, I understand, that a player can leave if his coach leaves, but he can't leave until 15 days after.
See y'all.
Until 15 days after the new coach has been hired. So he can't enter the portal until the new coach has a chance to keep him.
I saw that.
But anyway, there's all that that's going to trickle on down. And this may be the new way of college football with NIL and transfer portal, that we go through this every year.
It's like the NFL. You know, those windows are, they've been shorter in the NFL a long time with the, you know, longevity of the coaches, you have a couple of teams that are consistently good, and it seems like everybody else is just right there.
Yeah, I've always wondered about that in the NFL. Why is it that certain teams just never seem to have that really bad year, like the Steelers? The Steelers are never just awful. Now, they haven't been great recently, but they never seem to be awful.
Three coaches in the last 50 years.
Yeah.
I mean, the Falcons have had three coaches in the last 15 minutes.
Oh, man, the Falcons have laid eggs lately, haven't they?
It's awful.
What's the latest on Penix? Is he coming back? Do you know?
I saw a little thing today. I don't think they know. They're 5-point underdogs at New England Sunday. They've got a bunch of people hurt. Drake London, the receiver, Kyle Pitts. I tell you what, if I had number 7, that Bijan.
Oh, man, he's a beast, isn't he?
I mean, he'd be hurt because he'd be touching the ball about 30 times a game if I was the coach.
Now, I tell you who has remade his career is Matt. Is it Matt Jones, the guy who's with the Indianapolis Colts? Is that the
– Oh,
he used to be at Alabama quarterback?
Yeah. What is his first name? Is it Mac Jones?
Mac, Mac Jones. I mean, he was a bomb out with it. Was it New England or Giants? I can't remember which he was with. And now he's over the Colts, and they got the best offense in the NFL.
It's crazy.
Somehow just things – click at some time in your career. You think about Kurt Warner, a guy who bounced around for a long time and finally got to the Rams.
Yeah, you talk about
he was a superstar. Yeah, that was a good movie. Did you enjoy that movie?
That was a great movie.
All right. Well, they're not going to make a movie about you and me. I don't think.
You never know, Brett. We eat enough of the Monster Mash at Brett's. They might make a Halloween movie.
All right. Hey, we'll be back next week to talk more college football. Be sure to like us and subscribe to us and tell everybody you know the best podcast you've seen or heard is Sidelines and Headlines.
Sidelines and Headlines. Right. Like us. Share us. Yeah. Thank you for joining us. Come eat at Brett's.
We'll see you later.
Adios.